Welcome back to your Valley Sports Plug. This is your 2024 Arizona State Sun Devils football check-in. The Arizona State Sun Devils football program is a strong 8-2, currently third in the Big 12 and 21st ranked in the nation. Guys, I am your host, Chris Patrick. Happy to be back here on the Valley Sports Plug Network. Make sure you like and subscribe right here on YouTube, Valley Sports Plug page. Also follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, and so many more places. Just type in Valley Sports Plug on Google and you'll find us right there. We do weekly live streams and recaps. Got content coming out every week. Once a month, we do our in-person podcast recording, which is the Heat Check Podcast. You can find that all right here on YouTube. But fellas, I want to get right into it. Of course, I'm your host, Chris Patrick, being joined by some very special guests this evening. First, you know him, you love him, host of the Valley of the Suplex Podcast, Nico. What's going on, bro?
What's good? What's good? Good to be a Devil, man. It's been fun this season. Glad we finally get to get on here and talk a little Sun Devil football.
Absolutely. We've been trying to put this together for a little bit, and it honestly kind of worked out that it got pushed a little bit because we had some exciting games in the meantime. But also returning, they joined us on our first ASU live stream preseason. We did that about 3 weeks before the start of the season, right as they were kicking off Mount Tontazona. We have the brothers Miller, Ben, and Steven. What's going on, fellas?
Always a pleasure, never a chore. And I don't know what you're talking about, Nico, because we've been talking the Sun Devil praises, or at least one of us has, every single year, every single game.
We're back. We're so back. It's about time. I'm so glad that finally Kenny has taken us to the promised land, just like we predicted, Ben.
Yeah, we is doing a lot of work there, but I'm happy to finally bring you into the wagon. We're excited. There's plenty of room on the Scatabus.
On the bus to bring back an oldie. I think everybody should be on the train by now. And this train is going places. There's a couple games left. We're going to be home against 14th ranked BYU this week. And then next week, of course, the Territorial Cup down in the Dirty T, Tucson. But don't want to put the cart before the horse or anything like that. Last time we were on this stream, we did kind of go game by game, made our predictions. As you could kind of tell, they're maybe tongue-in-cheek a little bit. Some of us were more optimistic than others. So you both had said that you didn't expect ASU to be in a bowl game this year. Looking like it's a pretty much a foregone conclusion that no matter what, they're going to be in a bowl game at this point. Ben, do you have anything to say to your brother as far as that goes?
Listen, I think this podcast is about forgiveness, especially when we went through every single game and Steven just happened to think that the Sun Devils would be last in the Big 12, win only three games, if that. But, you know, we're happy to be here overall.
Look, I will say that, yes, I was wrong, as was the rest of the Big 12 media. I was not the only one picking the Sun Devils to be the basement dwellers of the conference in their first year. Okay, if anything, I was on the bandwagon that said it's going to take Kenny a lot more than just a couple flashy recruiting classes to finally turn around the damage that Herm and Antonio Pierce did to this program. And there are still very much some open wounds there that I think Kenny's going to have to continue to try and fix. But man, he has out-recruited himself. And what I love, I mean, we're going to talk Kenny. This is going to be one giant Kenny love fest, I think, over the next 60 to 90 minutes. But what I love is that he's still selling. He's out there. He's working the transfer portal. He is in his interviews. I heard one last week where he was extolling. He practically brought up a thermometer and said, you know what, right now, it's 68 degrees here in Tempe, Arizona, and we're playing for a spot in the college football playoff. It doesn't get any better than Tempe, Arizona right now. I think of all the kids that are out there in, you know, Ohio, in Pennsylvania right now, freezing while they play in their state championships. 68 degrees sounds pretty good out here.
Yeah, man, I'll take it. And no snow. I mean, it's probably not snowing in most parts of the country yet. But yeah, it's good. I mean, our last two games are going to be in Arizona, so that's definitely a plus. You're right, though. Kenny has been having hit after hit in his interviews and his post games. I think I saw one from earlier in the week. They were asking him about like scenarios to make the Big 12 championship game. And he's like, oh, I don't know if this team beats this team and some ranch falls on a chicken wing, then we're in or something like that. Like you said, it's going to be a Kenny love fest. I think you got to be all in for Mr. Dillingham. Nico, I do want to ask you, though, of course, you weren't unfortunately able to join us for that last live stream. How's the season shaken out, or how did you expect the season to shake out versus how it has so far?
I think I go into every season thinking that we have some way, shape, or form of stealing a spot into the college football playoff. And then I'm very quickly reminded, like, two games into the season that were ASU. Last year we went to the Fresno game, and that was absolutely depleting. We gave up 52 some odd points in that game. So, you know, going to the Mississippi State game this year and us beating an SEC team for the first time in I believe our history, is, you know, from then on, I was like, dude, we've got it. Like, we have a chance. And I listening to other podcasts, like, I listen to like Bussin' with the Boys, who do have Valley plugs, and you know, they're just now getting on the ASU train. Whereas, like, if you've been here the whole ride, man, we've been really running with Kenny. And you want to talk about selling. What's up, dude? You want to talk about selling, is that, like, honestly, he's really like in touch with his WWE side. His like end game interviews where he's like fading off into the crowd and like, you know, like that, if I'm a kid, senior, junior, and I'm like thinking like, where can I go? Where can I make an impact? And then you see Kenny Dillingham doing those post game pressers and falling into a crowd of like just kids in black shirts. Like if that doesn't get your blood flowing, I don't know what will. So for me as an ASU fan, I'm pumped for this season. It's already a win. Chalk everything up as a win. 8-2. I mean, you wouldn't want to see it, but we could lose every game for the rest of the season, and we're still going bowling, and I'm still, like, all things considered, happy. So, I don't know, man. This is going to be a big Kenny love fest for sure, but, like, you got to love the tone and the attitude that he has set in that locker room, and it's a nice vibe check for ASU football.
Right. For me, it's always great when the expectations are low and they are quickly exceeded. I mean, it's not to mention, like we've kind of talked about, like, this program is still, for all intents and purposes, in a rebuild phase. And right now it looks like we're ahead of schedule. Now, Ben, something your brother said on that stream that I remember is that he predicted that the games would be close, and he was right about that. We only have looks like three games with a margin of victory margin of 10 or more, and two of those were exactly 10 points, if I'm not mistaken, looking at the schedule here. So this honestly, this record could be looking a lot different, but at 8-2, are you worried about those close games at all down the stretch?
You know, I think that what you show at this point in the season, if you have so many of those games where it could just be the snap of a ball that decides whether it's a win or a loss. But our team has been really making sure to finish strong and play with a lot of passion and aggression, especially finishing out the game. Now, that being said, every single game that we've had this year, ASU has always gone up, scored extremely quick within the first couple drives of the first quarter. And then we have to kind of play catch up in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, holding on for dear life. Now, this is a much better place to be in than Kansas, who I think has over five less than single possession losses that just beat BYU. So I think that from that perspective of, is it luck? Is it, or is it something else? I would put my money on it being the coaching staff and the players really making sure to finish strong in each of those outings.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And within that, like, I guess, Steven, when I'm looking at the schedule here, what do you think was the point in the season, or what game or victory where you kind of thought, this team might actually be better than we initially thought?
I think I got to ride with Nico here and say the Mississippi State game. I mean, when you have done something as historic as beating, it doesn't even matter that Mississippi State is, you know, toward the tail end of the SEC, but the SEC is crazy this year. You've got Vandy beating Bama. Like, so who knows what's going on over there? I think, you know, winning against an SEC team at home, and all the fans getting to see that and, you know, feed off of that, I think that's when people were like, okay, they've arrived. I mean, they came out in that first game. They put an absolute whooping on Wyoming. I mean, 48-7, like, they clearly showed up that they came to play. And I don't think people had too many doubts. I mean, obviously the big question mark with Levitt coming in at quarterback, but people, you know, were ready for this offense. And they had big expectations for this team to try and put up points. I think where we've all been surprised has been the D, actually, at the beginning of the year was really what set them apart. And the way they were winning the turnover battle, I think that, to me, has been the most surprising and most pleasant thing, because that's a young D right there. So if Kenny can keep those guys engaged, build on that base, and he's got a group that appears to really enjoy playing together, I think, you know, the D could be what really carries us, you know, going into next year.
Sorry, pulling up graphics. Mike made these beautiful graphics for us, and I totally was ignoring that. I'm sorry, Michael, but yes, we are in the hunt for the Big 12 championship. I did kind of mention it a bit ago with Kenny Dillingham kind of talking about the scenarios. But Nico, I mean, I guess it goes without saying, but they probably have to beat Utah this weekend to be in that conversation. What are you leaning right now towards the likelihood of that happening?
Man, this honestly is like one of the few games that actually that kind of scares me a little bit. That BYU team is good. I don't know, man. Darius Lassiter, the wide receiver for BYU, has been an absolute stud all year, making freak moves, from the Valley, graduated from Hamilton. So you got a return case and one of their better players. I don't know. It's a little worrisome. But our defense has been unreal. If we're going to let Sam Cook, like, I'm okay with it. I don't know that they're coming off a tough loss to Kansas. You know, they're going to be pissed off. It's going to be a pissed off BYU team. But, you know, soaking and quaking, I think we're taking ASU on this one.
Oh man, gonna be jumping on the bed for sure. Steven, we kind of did this in our season preview, but my logic always follows as KU beat BYU and ASU beat KU, so should be an ASU win, right?
By the transitive property, I mean, I think you got to give it to them. Unfortunately, you know, there's a reason they play the games, so we can't chalk too much up to past successes. But no, I think actually it's a relatively good matchup. I love, you know, one of the things that I was saying in our kickoff was with conference realignment, something that people are sleeping on is that we're going to get weird new rivalries. And I can't think culturally of more different places than Provo, Utah, and Tempe, Arizona. Last time I checked, ASU does not have a very strict honor code. So I think that, you know, if we're getting a playoff atmosphere in Tempe this weekend, with BYU coming in, and, you know, like they travel well, they show up, like there are going to be BYU fans. I know Kenny put out his plea to make sure that we're keeping ASU tickets in ASU hands, but there will be a BYU contingent at that stadium that's going to be loud and rowdy and want to see their team play their way into the playoff. So I'm here for it. You know, I know if Mike is on, we both happened to be at the ASU-GCU basketball game. Talk about a new rivalry. Like, we're, you know, I think ASU, like, I see it in basketball, and we can talk about this in a little bit, but, you know, maybe even in football, like, we don't mind wearing the villain hat. You know, like, we can play with a chip on our shoulder, and I think that's really dangerous, especially when you're playing with house money like a team like this is.
100%. And now they have something to play for. Ben, what you got?
You know, and I think that especially when you are talking about wanting to wear the villain hat, that's just Valley as a whole, isn't it? Like, looking back at Suns and Four, at any chance where an Arizona team can be the bad guy and be bad men, then people will rally behind that and be the worst versions of ourselves, but also makes it the most fun sporting versions of ourselves too. And I think that for this BYU game, we're already seeing the cracks happen with BYU, where they barely beat Utah the week before Kansas on a very questionable call. They've had some other tough games against the bottom half of the Big 12, with only beating Oklahoma State two weeks before Utah by 3 points, a late field goal. I think that this team being Arizona State, is going to have the better environment and also just the stronger and more confident team after coming up and watching Sam Lovett get his confidence each game and be more comfortable with throwing the ball, but also our receiving core being able to be led by a legend, Hines Ward, which I know, Chris, that you were really excited about as a Pittsburgh guy. Making sure that these guys, number one, that's attracting new talent, but also they're learning and they're being more comfortable making big plays by throwing the ball. And of course, all this rests on Scataboo's back too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Scataboo started the season incredibly hot, like probably not outside of the Valley, but people were really, you know, clamoring to maybe have him be in the Heisman conversation. Now, as the season plays out, you know, things change, other guys step up.
One vote, one Heisman vote.
He did get one. Incredible. Well, okay, well, then let's talk about the Doak Walker Award semifinalist, Cam Nature Boy Scataboo. Don't know if you guys saw this, about a week or two ago, he lost his dog. There was a citywide manhunt in Tempe. He thought maybe someone broke in. He was supposed to go to like a autograph signing, but then his dog was missing. Dog just got out. It was like down the block. So Cam got his dog back. So he should be in the right headspace. But Nico, what have you been appreciating about Mr. Scataboo here so far?
I hate to do this, but like there's so many similarities between, I feel like, this ASU team and the Arizona Cardinals right now. Just with like tone being set. And I feel like it comes from Gannon and it comes from Dillingham. And I think it comes from James Conner. And I think it comes from Scataboo. I think that this ASU team is not the same team when he's not. And we saw it in the game that he missed. Like, we looked like a vastly different team without Cam there. So I don't know. Personally, I love the old school running style. I love the downhill. If you don't get out of my way, I'm just going to run you over. The dude, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've seen an ASU back operate the way he operates, which is nice to have a Derrick Henry downhill style runner as opposed to all of the receiving pass catching backs that we are so commonly used to as Sun Devil fans. Yeah, for me, just that it's a get the fuck out of my way kind of attitude, and I love it, man.
He runs angry, exactly, like downhill. I mean, you can see here over 1500 all-purpose yards, so he's averaging at least 150 yards a game, just about. Steven, you know, we talk about him getting one vote, but do you think that without Cam this team would be looking a lot different? I mean, asking stupid questions here, but
yeah, no, you're totally right. I don't think anyone expected, again, you know, I was wrong about just about everything when it comes to this team. So Cam's performance has absolutely blown me away. I mean, you know, the modern football has really moved away from having that bellwether type back. And I think teams forget that when you go, you know, go cheap, if we're going to look at, you know, on the pro side, with a back, and you rotate rookies in and out, and you don't invest in a guy, it changes what you can do on offense. It forces you to not, you know, you're not able to open things up with the play action. You're not able to get as creative. And Kenny, you know, being an offensive minded coach, he's a creative guy. So because of Cam's stellar play, that has not only made Sam Levitt's life easier, because every team has to load the box and be ready for someone to come and just jam it through. But it also has allowed, you know, like, look at the separation that wide receivers are able to get, like Tyson, like, you know, the big throws that Levitt's making, that's because the team is still having to load up the box and be ready for someone to pop out of the backfield. So it's exactly what Kenny needed. You know, I don't know if even Kenny thought that this team was going to gel as quickly and as effectively as they have so far, but it's been really fun to watch, even if it's making me eat my own words.
Hey, good position to be. Better to be, you know, a little pessimistic and be surprised than to be overly optimistic and be disappointed. At least that's always kind of my train of thought. You know, Ben, I want to give you a chance here if you want to sing any of Scataboo's praises here.
You know, I think that just being near the top of the list for yards after contact, he doesn't go down the first time that he makes contact, gets hit. He rarely trips. It's just downhill all the way once he gets the ball. And even like you always see his little like the shake after every single rush that he makes too. He's there. He's a dog, and I'm glad that he found his own.
Yeah. No, 100%. I don't think he gives up easy. Ben, I do want to stick with you for a second here, because again, I'm going to keep, you know, referencing back our kickoff stream that we did, but we were uncertain at that point in time who exactly was going to be the starting quarterback. And so far it's been all Sam Levitt. I think Sims played a little bit when Levitt was banged up, but Bourget hasn't even sniffed the field. Is that a pleasant surprise for you, or kind of what you expected out of Levitt?
You know, I mean, especially when someone coming in from another Power Five school that was highly recruited coming out of high school, but redshirted his freshman year, but now he's being a true starter. I think what you're seeing is that Kenny is a quarterback whisperer. He did the same thing with Bo Nix, both at Auburn and then later on at Oregon too. But just seeing that potential and giving him the reps that he needs to truly become a future elite quarterback in the NCAA. He's not quite there yet, but you see that confidence coming up, and the execution also improving game on game.
No, without a doubt. And he's still very young, right? This is technically his freshman year. Did he redshirt?
Yeah, he redshirted last year.
That makes sense. So I guess for me, and this is why I kind of want to open it up to you guys. Maybe Nico, I'll have you chime in first here. With Levitt, you know, exceeding and doing well, does that concern you, him being so young, the potential for him to hop in the transfer portal and seek a more strong team? Or with the success that we've had this year, is he going to buy in and be the franchise quarterback for this college team?
I think as ASU fans, we're just forever jaded in this category, man. I mean, how many dudes have started here and gone somewhere else? You know, I mean, and obviously the glaring one is Jaden Daniels. That's the one everybody's going to point to right now, because that's the freshest one. But yeah, like I hope that what I'm seeing, like with Kenny Dillingham, like walking with his arm around Sam Levitt and that I'm hoping that Sam's buying in. I'm hoping that he's seeing that there's like an imprint that can be made here. That's what I always thought was one of the more marketable things about like the Sun Devils, is like, we do have a decent history, but like, man, somebody can stand out and be the guy here. And Sam has the opportunity, with being a redshirted freshman, to be the guy for many years, which we have not had since like Andrew Walter. You know, like the ASU has always shown to be a good program when we have a consistent quarterback. It seems that we struggle when we're going from quarterback to quarterback to quarterback to quarterback, when we can't even tell you the name of the starting quarterback. You know, like I think we need the consistency, and I'm hoping Sam sees it. You know, but shit, if Bama or someone in the SEC or Oregon comes calling, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, right. And I think the NIL changes a lot of that too. You know, Steve, we did talk a little bit about, you know, I think this kind of might take off the sting a little bit of losing Rashada to Georgia, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, Rashada came in and he already had kind of that big question mark of how he left Florida. You know, I think there was like $4 million, I think, that he was expecting that didn't pan out. And then, I mean, you look at what we just saw at UNLV, if you guys have been following that saga, another quarterback who, you know, apparently during the recruiting process, as he was in the transfer portal, was under the impression that millions of dollars were waiting for him just for suiting up. And, you know, this is unfortunately this is the effect of bringing all of that dark money out into the light, is that now it's people are playing the game within the game. And it was always happening, but now, you know, we've just got ESPN reporting on it. And I think the sport is in a better place because we're all being realistic about it. There's always going to be, you know, like Mika, like you said, your Oregons or your Bamas. But I really think that, you know, players want to play for certain coaches. Players want to play for guys who get them, understand them, set the culture in the locker room and let them just ball out and do their own thing. And I can't think of a coach, you know, maybe Dion right now probably has, you know, a little bit more cachet, but players nationwide, whether they're in high school or they're currently, you know, at one of those SEC teams that is maybe underperforming, they're seeing the guys having the season that they're having at ASU, how much they love playing for Kenny. And I think that is a valuable, valuable asset when it comes to ensuring that you have team continuity.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think with the success we're finding, and like, I guess just to say, with how we're doing, with what we're building here, Kenny Dillingham ain't going nowhere anytime soon. You got guys like Hines Ward, you got this team buying in, you have a young quarterback. Those are all selling points for Kenny to go sit down in these parents' living rooms and really sell them on this program. Not to mention, now he can also say we were a top 25 team in a bowl game, possibly into the playoffs as it's expanded. Ben, is there any way that you can overstate how big the success this season is going to be for the future of the school?
You know, people are going to keep making the comparisons between Dion's performance and Kenny's performance too, and the turnarounds that both have made. And if you look at the single year improvements, both being in a similar place, ASU was still so much worse than a horrible, horrible Colorado team last year. And now we're both in the same position, both 8-2 with signature wins under our belt. But I think that if you look back at the grander scheme of things, the ASU was never as bad as that 2022 Colorado team, which I think went 0-10. Did they even win a game at that point? But I think that this is showing the importance of like two different culture shifts in the sport overall. Like, do you want to play for someone where this is Dion, where everything is extremely transactional, literally, with all of that? Or do you want to play with someone who is building the right culture, making sure everyone is the right fit, and is also, you know, has his players back day in and day out? And I think that looking forward, if we can talk about the what the math looks like for ASU to make a run at the end of this season. So there is a logjam up here at the top of the Big 12, where BYU still 9-1 with that loss to Kansas last week. Colorado 8-2. Colorado has Kansas next week, which also gives everyone some hope, and let's cheer on for let's rock chalk, if you will, for those Jayhawks. And Colorado finishes at Oklahoma State. But ASU, we have BYU, which is the best possible win that we have left in our season, and would be a season defining win too. That would leave us with three top 25 wins. But also, as long as we win out, but BYU and Colorado both drop one, which if we win out, then BYU automatically drops one, we're going to be right up there in the conference championship, which is something that Herm Edwards never even sniffed in his tenure in Tempe. So I think that there is definitely a lot of hope, and like, we're really driving our destiny when it comes to playing not only for a Big 12 championship, but in the first round of that CFP.
Ben, something I'm curious, because it looks like you know this playoff math better than me. It looks like Boise State is also there on the cusp. So is the Big 12 guaranteed that the Big 12 champion is getting into that? And is that going to potentially bounce Boise State out? Because they've got that Heisman. Like, you would think the hype train is going to get Boise State into the playoff if they win out.
Well, and Boise State being 9-1, their only loss is to a last second field goal from number one Oregon at the start of the season. So they have the best loss in the country right now, even for being a group of five team. I'm sorry, group. Yeah, definitely group of five. But they'll be in the Pac-12, the new version, Pac-12 2.0, starting in 2026. But I think that there is potential for the selection committee to not give the Big 12 the respect it deserves. There is nothing guaranteed that the Big 12 champion is going to make it into the CFP. That being, if the top four or five highest ranked conference champions, if Boise State wins the Mountain West and is higher ranked, if Army wins the American and is higher ranked than whoever the Big 12 champion is, that leaves the Big 12 champion high and dry, no matter who it is, unless it ends up being BYU and they end up being higher ranked than Army or anyone else. But you see that in the rankings right now, where you have SMU or Boise State, SMU or who was it? It's SMU and
Boise State, SMU, BYU, and Texas A&M are all
right there
on the same line, along with Tennessee.
It's that SMU, BYU, in a very similar 9-1 seasons. SMU's only loss, BYU. I can't understand why the voters still in the selection committee still puts SMU above a BYU when you have very similar season records with a true head-to-head win of BYU there. So I think that's showing a lot of questions around the level of the Big 12 is playing at compared to other teams, other leagues, even though we don't feel that way at all.
Well, and that's like I think the biggest thing that we need to look at is like, are we going to realistically, the Big 12 is the one that's going to get shafted if we get five SEC teams. You know, you look at it and the SEC has been so cannibalistic this year that like you don't even know what to do with Tennessee and Georgia and Alabama. And, you know, you kind of have to look at resumes and all that kind of shit. And that does mean that there is a strong chance that an SEC leaning committee, we've already seen in years past, that SEC does get the benefit of the doubt on a lot of these selections. And yes, is it a better conference? Yeah, for sure. But like, we don't need five SEC teams in the college playoffs. So I hope that we're going to play this thing like, I don't know. We're asking college football to play it straight. Something that like has never been done ever. So I don't know. I'm hoping that like, honestly, we sneak it. We have to beat BYU. No questions. And then we have to, as far as I'm concerned, win the Big 12 championship. That's the only way that we are solidified in those college football standings. Fuck, man, it's going to be crazy to see, but like,
yeah. And that's part of it too. So there is a single situation where ASU could possibly make the Big 12 championship if we lose to BYU. We would still have to beat Arizona in Tucson over Thanksgiving weekend, but then also every other team above us, that would include BYU, Colorado, and also possibly Iowa State, who's also 8-2 right now in the Big 12, would all need to collapse at the end.
So in a perfect world, say the ASU does make the Big 12 championship, out of the three potential opponents being BYU, Colorado, and Iowa State, who would you guys rather they go up against in that potential game?
That's a really interesting question. I think, number one, if we beat BYU, BYU is not going to be getting into that that game. I think that we would do better in a second time around against them if that ended up being the case. Colorado is scary as well. Travis Hunter is just an absolute freak, but also their defense and their line, the offensive line and defensive line specifically have been a problem for them, especially at the start of the season with unforced errors, penalties, and there. So I think that the level that ASU is playing at right now could give them a run for the money. Iowa State, I haven't actually seen a lot of Iowa State games so far this year, but their quarterback does like to throw long balls and is a very fun and energetic team, similar to ASU.
So on that Iowa State team, I actually think I would take them solely because they've lost two out of their last three. So they have dropped games to KU, which again, it was a close, it was 9-point game. And then they lost a nail biter to Texas Tech. So give me a team that's starting to break down in the second half of the season. The one thing that makes them scary is they are sixth in the country in fourth quarter scoring. They're scoring 11 points a game there. If ASU plays like ASU normally plays, and we've got a nail biter going into the fourth quarter, I don't really want a team that's used to scoring, you know, nearly two touchdowns. They're going to have to play smart, and they're going to have to come out of that game strong and have that lead, have a commanding lead at halftime and carry it through. It has to be kind of a wire-to-wire win, which, again, I think Kenny's totally capable of. But yeah, you need those guys to come out. We can't have a slow start. I think, you know, it matching up, playing BYU twice this late in the season, I think could be interesting. Like that could be the start of this kind of new fun rivalry. But, you know, let's be honest, like what the fans want and what the people want is the people want Deion. The people want new blood playing in the championship. I feel like that would be just, you know, I love Deion. I think what he's done for the sport is ultimately a net positive. But like, I want to cheer against him. I really want to cheer against Deion in the Big 12 championship. I just feel like that would be such a fun way to cap off the season.
Especially Shadur saying that Arizona State was his favorite place to play against.
Exactly. You know, like, come on, let's make it fun.
The storylines write themselves.
Honestly, I think that's the last team we want to see. I don't want to see a hot Colorado team at all. And it's strictly Shadur and Travis Hunter that scare the shit out of me. Travis on both sides of the ball there's a reason he's going to probably go number one, unless the team who has one desperately needs a quarterback. And there's a reason he's going to win the Heisman. I don't know. I love Deion too. I don't want him anywhere near that Big 12 championship game. I'd much rather see Iowa State or BYU. I don't think it's going to be BYU, but shit, it's going to probably end up being Colorado. If I'm being
I think I would just say real quick, unfortunately, when I'm looking at the remaining schedules for all these teams, Colorado does in theory have the easier route, only playing at Kansas and then versus Oklahoma State. You can almost surely guarantee they're going to win that last game of the season. And Kansas has just played spoiler. Like, they don't even really have that impressive of a record, but they have had a few signature wins in there. Whereas obviously BYU's got to play us. We got to play them. And then Iowa State, Steven, you mentioned they've been struggling. They don't have two easy games either. They're playing at Utah and then versus Kansas State, which, although they slipped, they're still a good squad.
You know, and I think there's both of those. The one thing that we need to do no matter what is win out the season. And then the rest is based on whatever else happens in the league. There is still one scenario where ASU wins out and doesn't make the championship. And that's if Colorado and Iowa State also win out, because Iowa State could win a tiebreaker between ASU and Iowa State, mainly from, I believe, that Cincinnati and Texas Tech loss.
Which, wouldn't that be like the perfect, like, Suns in the bubble way for this season to end? It's like, we do everything, we're in, you know, we think we're in control of our own destiny. We come out, we have this like awesome feel good season, and then we get left off the podium. Like, come on. Like, I've seen this movie too many times. This is Arizona sports in a nutshell. The team gives us something to hope for, and then reality comes crashing in. So I
what do you mean? The bubble Suns were the greatest NBA team of all time.
You know, we wouldn't have the finals Suns in that following season without the bubble Suns convincing CP3 to come there. So, you know, like, it is a good thing. It is possible to still get your heart broken and carry on that momentum into the next year and really do something with it. So, you know, consider if as long as we keep all the pieces together, I don't think it would be the worst. It would be heartbreaking, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if that truly does happen.
Now, we've talked a lot about BYU, but there's still one other extremely important game on our regular season, and that is the Territorial Cup. Now, we should be actively out for blood. And I know that Kenny is going to get this team exactly ready to go down into Tucson and win back that cup, because it has been 2 years with a heartbreaking loss in 2022, 38-35, and then just an absolute beatdown that we suffered against them last year at the end of the season, 59-23. So I think that there is no love lost there. And I think that we still need to take that one seriously, because it is that rivalry game. Crazy things always happen.
Exactly. Despite what it looks like on paper, because right now it looks like you should for sure be able to write ASU in as a win there. I wouldn't be surprised if the line comes out and is double digits in favor of ASU, but you're absolutely right. When it comes to the Territorial Cup, really any major rivalry game, like anything could happen. Nico, one to 10, what is your level of nervousness for this last game of the season?
Dude, this is going back to when I was like, you know, 8, 9, when I can like actively remember watching and rooting for football. Arizona State does like one of two things when we're good. We get ranked and then we lose the next week, or we have a really good season and then we lose to an abysmal U of A team. It seems to absolutely happen every single time we have a decent season. We get just absolutely smacked in the face by the redheaded stepchild. I do have some apprehension, because if we fall asleep at the wheel and start thinking about Big 12 championship, let's say we beat BYU, knock on wood, knock on glass, whatever you want to do. Let's say we beat BYU. These guys have to be up, and Kenny has to get these guys up, because this is a trap game. Because you're busy having daydreams and fantasies about the Big 12 championship, and a U of A team that has like some decent players can come and bite you in the ass if you're not looking. So I don't know. I am nervous, but I am also like, I have to remind myself, this is Kenny. This isn't Herm. This isn't Dirk Cutter. This isn't Dennis Erickson. This isn't, you know, this isn't the coaches that like we knew. This is that Kenny's got a different vibe on this program. So I almost have to gut check and reality check myself with this one, but I do feel a little more comfortable than I should.
Two quick things off of that. One is, I think the rivalry part of this, you know, one team playing spoiler, I think that goes both ways. I think, you know, ASU has ruined some seasons where U of A felt like they were going to be headed toward the top of the conference, and, you know, back in the Pac-12 days. Sad we even have to say that. But yeah, so like, I think whatever team is having the better year, the other team really loves to jump in here and ruin it for them. So that absolutely is at play. Also, let's keep in mind, there were two Heisman hopefuls going into the season on U of A's offense, both their quarterback and their wide receiver, who I think, you know, knowing how NFL scouts can kind of think they're a little too smart, you know, he could end up being the number one overall pick, because dude looks like Calvin Johnson out there. I mean, he's just, he put up crazy huge numbers at the beginning of the season. I think he's kind of trailed off, but you know, that's a powerful duo that could just catch lightning in a bottle. So I really, like he said, I hope Kenny has the guys up and ready to make sure that they don't let that game slip away from them early.
Yeah. I think that's what's crazy to me is like, admittedly, me being a guy who hasn't watched a single snap of Arizona Wildcat football this year, I'm going strictly off box scores here. Just the quarterback numbers alone, U of A's quarterback has 600 more, over 600 yards more than Leavitt thrown, obviously 11 interceptions. So they have a problem finding the end zone, and it seems like their defense isn't very strong either in U of A, getting big numbers put up on them. So I think their lack of defense could bode well for a pretty competent ASU offense. And you're right, though. McMillan with the 69 receptions, 1,100 yards, 7 touchdowns. I agree. It's when college scouts, like just talking about on the player level, when scouts are looking at a guy, they don't really give two shits about the team performance. It's how is this individual player performing? So from that perspective, they can do all they want with their stats, but clearly their quarterback ain't quite what they chalked it up to be. Now, again, not watching any of these games, I don't know. Do they have a real trash O-line, or is this guy just not living up to the hype? Ben, have you been watching any U of A football this year?
It is rude to even think that I would turn that on. But I will say that the quarterback and receiver combo for U of A, Fatifa and McMillan, were considered the best duo in almost the entire NCAA. And that was the main reason why U of A was considered so highly anticipated at the start of the Big 12 season. But it's all fallen apart around them. They're looking slow. They're not looking and executing the way that they were last year when they had a really breakout season. And I think it's also their O-line and defense have just been really, really weak overall.
I will say I have the misfortune of knowing a couple of U of A fans, and I will I have heard no good words about this new coach. He has in this initial season totally lost the fan base. They're calling for his head. It's Rich Rodriguez all over again. So you know, like, the team does appear to be suffering from inflated expectations. Things not panning out, and the finger pointing has started. So that's promising going into the game to know that they are a little bit in a place of chaos.
But can we repeat a 70-7 win?
I hope if we do, I hope we get another billboard, because there's the only thing that makes the drive to Tucson redeeming is being able on the way out of town to see that.
You can put it right next to the Buc-ee's billboard.
That's right. We are getting a Buc-ee's, aren't we?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
It takes a little time, but I was just down in Tucson last weekend for a concert, and there is a teaser sign on the way back pointing out that Buc-ee's has a presence out here. So yeah, get excited. And I don't know, like, the way everyone has seen the viral Buc-ee's description of jobs and what they pay. I mean, I'd be happy to go be an assistant manager at a Buc-ee's car wash. That may be my next move.
What's funny is I did just see that right before when I was like online, I was like, oh dang, like, they're even better than QT. I was curious when you guys said that. Is this the billboard you guys are talking about? Oh, or is there another one?
There was a different one that just had 70-7 from 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So did they win in 2022? They beat us?
Yes, we have not won since 2021.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so we need to get an updated one. 70-7 would be 70-0 would be even better, honestly.
Yeah, that's because they started letting fans dress out and play in that last quarter.
Yeah, the water boy got his reps in.
Hey, I just want to say I still have all 4 years of eligibility, so if they need me, they can call me.
You know, we haven't talked about one of the more intriguing storylines around this ASU team, which is that the kicking has been quite questionable, to the point where Kenny, in a post-game, I forget what game it was after, Ben, keep me honest. But
Cincinnati.
Kenny came out and said, if you are enrolled at ASU and you've got a leg, I will be having open tryouts on Monday. I'm not kidding. Email me. And then had to walk it back. I've not seen anything like that before. But like, this, are we, I'm going to put it out to the group. Chris, I'm going to steal your spot here. Are we nervous that this kicking problem hasn't been fully figured out yet?
It's been more on not extra points, but it's been on field goals overall. Has been the main problem for that. But I mean, I think looking at the games we've had since Cincinnati, the kicking has definitely improved. And I think that is, I believe our kicker is still like only a freshman or sophomore too, so still really young as well.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I thought that the whole calling out to the campus, let me get a kicker, that was a great move. I don't know. I was kind of pumped up about it. That got me. Maybe it's because we've had so many not like strong personality coaches that like when we get a coach that comes up to the microphone and is like, fuck it, whoever wants to kick, come see me, come knock on my door, you know? And then you have like legitimate, like, I don't know if you guys saw, but the kid who posted almost immediately to Twitter, who was just cranking 45, 50 yard field goals consistently. I'm a little upset Kenny did walk it back, because it's like, we give the dude a fucking walk. We'll let him walk on. Like, what's it worth? Because right now we still aren't great in that department. So, well,
and the kids have legs out there, you know, like, I don't know if anyone was watching college game day. Yep. But yeah, a kid in Georgia won like 600 grand for drilling one. So like, there are some diamonds in the rough out there apparently who are saving their eligibility.
Let's pause on that college game day snub that we have this weekend, where they did the same thing that they do every single year, whereas they pick a game, it ends up being Ohio State playing someone ranked, but both the big noon kickoff and game day will both be at the Ohio State Indiana game. And I think that it was just so infuriating to see them announce that before the BYU-Kansas or the ASU-Kansas State game even ended or even started.
Yeah, honestly, like, I, for those who don't know, I am a big Pat McAfee dick rider. So anything that Pat McAfee has his hands in, I am ingesting into my brain. Dude, him talking about the schools that were pissed off because it was Ohio State, and then him saying, like, yeah, we do go to certain schools where it's like they know we're here all the time, so they're not as like jazzed as when we go to like JMU or South Dakota, or, you know, like, I would, shit, man, at 34, I might be front row at college game day on a Saturday morning if it was at ASU, just because I can't remember the last time, if ever, college game day has been here.
2005.
Yeah, see, that's too long.
I was trying to find the graphic for it because I did see it earlier in the week. Oh, yep, here we go. This isn't quite the – no, it's a bad picture. Never mind. But, yeah, 2005, Lee Corso looks much younger. It was a cool scene, though. I mean, you got they're outside. You got the stadium in the back. All right, fine, I'll show it. It's not great quality, but I'll show it. Might as well, right? Let's see if I can zoom in. That's 2005 graphics, so
– yeah, I mean – was think that of what that would be like today.
Oh,
I mean, you can't even get that view today because there's too many other buildings in the way.
That's true.
That's like right where the university housing is, right? Like,
my freshman year, 2008, they were number one Georgia. Matthew Stafford's Georgia team was, if we had won week three, they were going to come to the Georgia game, and they ended up blowing it against UNLV, which was heartbreaking because they had already started building the stage outside of Hacienda. So getting the cold shoulder from college game day is practically an ASU tradition at this point.
That was the game where Noshawn Moreno jumped from like the 5 yard line into the end zone on ASU. That was such a devastating day to be a Sun Devils fan.
Oh, but I think it just with the college game day snub, I think it just speaks to a broader narrative, if you will, of just Arizona sports in general not getting the respect of the national media, where, you know, every year we deal with it with the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks, and not as much with the Suns anymore, but even still, with the Suns being probably, when healthy, a top five team in the league, they still really, and having Kevin Durant, they still really don't get talked about. And it's the same with the college teams. You know, for obviously U of A has kind of cemented themselves in basketball historically speaking, but other than that, I mean, ASU just never gets any love on the national stage, whether it's football or basketball.
Yep, which is slightly concerning because of how good of a basketball school we've been. You know, like, the fact that we're not talked about basketball-wise always blows my mind.
I think it's partially there is that we have not, under Bobby Hurley, we have not won a single NCAA first-round game. Now, we've made it out of the first four of barely making it into the tournament several times, But that has been the main thing, is that we need to get over that first hump of even competing in day two of the first weekend.
Yeah, I think we got the wrong Hurley in the whole brother mix there. But, you know, I don't know, man. It's just for such a big market that Arizona is now and that Phoenix is, like, you can't tell me, like, you know, that we're not worth talking about. And the media giving the Valley the cold shoulder. And like, Chris, you're right. Like, we struggle to even get the Suns talked about. And they are a top five team because everybody wants to talk about the Celtics right now. So, like, you know, we won't get the love until we do something crazy, which is why when I play college football 25, I have custom schedules. I put that shit on freshmen, and then I dog walk Georgia in week one because that's what ASU needs to do to be, like, talked about nationally.
Yeah. No, I agree. It seems like we just have such a higher hurdle to overcome than any other team. I mean, I'm sure that's not exactly the case, but for as big of a market as we are, as many people live in this state, you would think that we'd get a little bit more love and a little bit more attention. But alas, we know we've been here long. We've all been here long enough. We know how the story goes. You know, Steven, I know this is our Arizona State Sun Devils football live stream, but I think we're getting close to being winding down a little bit. So while we have some time, while Mr. Ben is available here, why don't we talk some ASU hoops? You know, you guys mentioned Bobby Hurley there. They are getting their season started. They already got their season started, but they're playing tonight, right, Ben? They just tipped off a little bit ago.
Yep, playing against known powerhouse Cal Poly on ESPN+. Actually, I should probably pull that up.
So while Ben's pulling that up, I will give my field report from the ASU-GCU game that they played at the Footprint Center downtown. First off, like, main takeaways, electric environment. I don't know if you guys haven't been to a GCU game. The Havocs, as they call themselves, have really, like, turned into, I think, like, the Allen Fieldhouse of the West. What they've figured out, they have coordinated student section dances to the marching band. So during a halftime or during a timeout break, the band's going off, they're doing their thing. They've got the dance team and the pom team out there on the court, and the students are loving it. They're playing along. They've got, you know, a whole thing. It's intimidating to watch, and it definitely gets the players hyped up. They come out of a timeout playing a little bit harder and they're going after those 50-50 balls. So I was a little nervous at first. ASU started slower than I think they would have liked. The GCU team hung in there, but ultimately, you know, the talent on ASU, especially Quaintance, guy that he, I think, originally committed to Kentucky and flip-flopped at the last minute to come to ASU, which was a huge, you know, huge coup for Bobby. The talent absolutely, you know, played out in the second half and kind of got the game into a more comfortable spot. And then, yeah, you had the ASU fans just jeering on the way out as GCU was loading up the buses. So, I loved it for a neutral site game, you know, a crosstown rivalry. Absolutely what we need. GCU's been to the tournament more recently than ASU has, so they do have, I think, a little bit more to hang their hat on recently, but yeah, this team, you know, I came into the season feeling pretty similar to ASU basketball as I did to ASU football. You know, like, we have not had the sustained success, especially when you consider that Bobby's brother is across the country winning back-to-back championships over at UConn. Haven't had the success that I think we would have liked to see under Bobby, and we haven't really had the continuity. You know, he's picked some weird fights with some guys who were supposed to be stars, and it's led to a probably more tumultuous Bobby Hurley experience than we originally thought when we snagged him. So it does look like these guys are gelling, you know, kind of at the right time. They're starting off strong. I'm really curious to see, you know, much like with football, Big 12 basketball is a whole different beast, and you are going to get the Big 12 basketball is the SEC football equivalent of teams that cannibalize each other. There are no easy games on that schedule. So I really hope that they have a strong showing through the rest of the non-conference and go in, you know, week to week in conference play, ready to play teams that are, you know, going to have strong student sections. They're going to have, especially in some of these more rural communities, they're going to fill the stadium with rowdy fans that have been going to every game for the last 20 years. And they're going to have kids, you know, that want to play in some of the best basketball environments in the country. So definitely I'm cautiously optimistic, but based on what I've seen so far, but yeah, really strong start to the season.
Definitely. And I think that the biggest piece was like number one, playing through what ended up being a rock fight of a GCU game at a neutral site, being at the Talking Stick Stadium, but also how we played, and it constantly went back and forth with number six Gonzaga just a few weeks ago too. So going to Spokane, playing in the kennel against a very, very good Gonzaga team, and just losing it in the last minute and a half. So I think that this team is extremely talented. It's very young, but also what's different than most other Bobby teams is that they're tall. They are tall, they're long, and they are much more athletic. We'll see if they maintain the same shooting problems that Bobby teams are known to have. But if they can lock in on that defense, on that man-to-man defense, and just being scrappy and forcing those turnovers, we're going to see a lot more success from the Sun Devil basketball team.
I think for Bobby Hurley's sake, he needs to continue an upward trajectory and not take any steps back. Nico, we saw he got the 2-year contract extension that's going to keep him here through, I believe, 2026 season. How much stock do you put in him needing to perform and get past that first round, like Ben said, in order for him to be extended beyond that point, should he want to?
I mean, he has to. I don't think it's an option for Bobby at this point. I think the recruiting that he does, the talent that he gets, we have to get past round one. I mean, if he wants to stay here, because I do think that ASU looks at it and we do understand that we have like a good basketball program. And albeit, I think we have a good basketball program in spite of U of A, because we were just tired of getting our shit pushed in from U of A every single year. So like we have like a decent program. I think the thing that I think Ben and both Steven hit on is that like we're young and we're athletic. That's his land. That's his kind of like landing zone for like success. If he can't do it with his crop of like young, athletic, long players, like I don't see anything past 2 years.
It's the equivalent of like a prove it deal. You know, it's like ASU saying, hey, we don't want to go out to the marketplace and start from scratch. We've got a good thing going. You know, you're here in Tempe. Your kid was on the team last year. Like they're, I don't know if Hurley graduated or not, but
he's a graduate student player. So he's still on the team.
Still on the team. So, yeah, like, you know, I think they ASU fully intended for this to be a marriage, and it hasn't really started out the way that I think either side wanted. So yeah, that 2-year deal to me just says that ASU, thank goodness they're not completely over it and blowing the whole thing up. But, you know, notice it's not a 4-year deal. It's not a 6-year deal. Certainly not the kind of lifetime deal that Coach Self has out there in Kansas. So it's, I think Bobby feels the hot seat. He, you know, and he's a competitor. He was at Duke. He was when he went into the league. He probably, this bothers him more than anyone else. So I think that's going to, he knows that the fire's there. And I think it's just a matter of keeping the guys playing hard, especially as their season is only going to get more difficult.
And Steven knows this. I already have my tickets for ASU versus Kansas in Kansas secured for January 8th.
Attaboy. Attaboy. You'll have to give us some inside scoop, some boots on the ground content. But yeah, with Bobby, I totally agree. It's absolutely a prove it deal. I know in seasons past, he's had a lot of criticism for his sideline antics, getting, you know, maybe a little too fired up, channeling a different Bobby, Bobby Knight. I don't think he's thrown a chair on the court yet, but I do want to see, you know, Bobby maybe take some deep breaths, get in a few anger management classes and be a more level-headed coach on the sideline, because I think that translates to the players as well. Like, it's okay to coach with passion, but if it's to the point where it's turning your players off and guys aren't going to want to be here, then that's a problem. And I got to believe that might've been a factor, you know, aside from the lack of success, the kind of, I guess, lack of a better word, I'll say it again, the antics of Bobby on the sideline. I don't know what you guys think about that.
You can't hurt the team. That's what it comes down to. Like, I love the animation. I love that he's, you know, he's clearly, he gives a shit. You can't teach that. You have to hire for that. So I'll take it. I'll take that as opposed to him just being a statue, you know, like, and just standing there and staring off into the distance. But if it's giving up technicals and you're giving a team chances on the foul line and getting ball back and you're making it harder for your own players, it's really hard to look past all that.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, like, I don't know, like, if you are going to get a tech, you have to make sure that that you're going to be motivating, right? Like, that tech needs to be a motivation tech. It can't be one of those techs where it knocks the wind out of the team. And because there is a difference. There is a time and a place. Like, when one of your players gets knocked down, you don't get a call. The dude's on the ground. It was an egregious. Go for it. Go absolutely off, because your team's going to look at that and say, that's a guy who's standing up for us. We can't have silly shit. And you hit it right on the head, Steven. Like, it cannot hurt the team. End of story. I also love the animation. Love that the dude cares. That's what you want to see. That's what we beg for as fans from our coaches. So I love that. But yeah, cannot hurt the team.
And with that too, I think that when you have success both in the revenue sports, so in football and then also men's basketball, that kind of feeds in on itself. That gets more people talking about Arizona State and more people considering it, even if you're not playing that sport that's having the success too.
No, that's a really good point. I think what stands out to me, you know, going back to just talking about the team, what's been standing out most to me so far is the fact that there's not really like one guy that this team is leaning on. So it's a real cohesive unit. You know, you got Jahid, is it Jahad? Bashir Jahad or Jahid? Jahed?
Jihad,
yeah. Okay, perfect. Sanan, Mason, and Freeman, they're all averaging, you know, between right around 12 points each. Is there one guy that kind of stands out to you, Steven, that you think is going to be a real game changer, or you think it's going to be more of a team effort throughout?
I think it's Quaintance, their big guy. I think also 17 years old, so like talk about upside. But I think in you know, past years, like, we've seen an overcorrection in college ball going back to having like the big man down below. You look at, you know, like the success that Gonzaga had, the success that UConn just had, the success that Purdue had with Zach Edey. There's a lot of teams that are building around having that 7 foot, you know, guy play in the five spot. That almost, you know, you can just surround him with shooters and just play off of that physical advantage, shooters and speed. And so, you know, ASU, they're not going to be that team. We're still guard you. And so I'm all for that. Like, I like that identity. And I think the guys that transfer here will still want to play in that system. So I don't think we need to necessarily reinvent ourselves, but I do think, you know, if you're playing against a Kansas, you got to have an answer for Hunter Dickinson. And, you know, that there's most of the teams in the Big 12, they have some guy who is in the 6'10 to 7 foot range who is just going to eat up the boards. And so I want to see Quaintance continue to grow. You know, he's got a lot of growing up to do pretty fast, but I think he's definitely seemed like he's in a good spot to, I think, have a breakout year.
And the hope is, too, that since he is the truly youngest player in NCAA basketball, still he just barely turned 17, he can't declare for the NBA draft for another 2 years. So he has this year and all of next year, too. Now, whether or not he stays at ASU both years is still an open-ended question. I think that will go to the highest bidder at some point. But the talent that Bobby came in from the best players on their mid-major teams. So we have like Alston Mason, Bashir Jihad, and then getting that duo freshman class of Sanon and Quintance is really just building into something that I think can be pretty special.
Time will tell, indeed. I like the start of the season. I like what ASU football is doing. Definitely got a couple big games. Guys, as we kind of wind this down, I want to go around the horn one last time, pick your brains on any last thoughts you might have, any prayers you want to say. Nico, pass it to you first, brother.
I'm pumped, man. Gotta love where we're at. It's nice to be ahead of schedule. We'll see what happens on Saturday. And that's going to basically tell the tale for the rest of the season as far as ASU football goes. ASU basketball, I love ASU basketball. I cannot wait for March, honestly. Let's hope we're there, but I cannot wait for March. It's been a blast. Appreciate you guys having me.
Of course, Nico, appreciate you being on. You're always welcome. Ben, what you got?
You know, I think that as long as we're truly going to be at the Crucible this Saturday against BYU, and it is a 2:30 p.m. Central time, so a 1:30 p.m. kickoff time in Arizona.
We don't recognize Central time here.
I'm sorry, a 1:30 p.m. kickoff time in Arizona, which, can you imagine just how disgusting Mill Avenue is going to be that evening if there is a Sun Devil victory? I wish I was there. That's the main point. But thanks for having us on. And Steve and I appreciate all of your apologies and the excitement that you have for Arizona State football. We hop on the wagon. We're ready.
You know, it feels good to be on the wagon. Thank you for finding space for me. This has been an awesome year. I think we touched on this, but, you know, a successful football team definitely bleeds into a successful basketball team. We're a bunch of front-running fans out here in Tempe, so let's give the people something to cheer for. I want to see the field goal post make its way down Mill Avenue on Saturday. Like, you know what? Like, let's rush the field if they pull it off. You know, let's make this special.
Tempe Town Lake is right there.
It is. Like, will it float? Time will tell.
Now we appreciate all this positivity, especially when you're wearing a Herm Edwards quote ASU t-shirt.
You play the game to win, or you play to win the game, excuse me.
Play to win the game. Here. One of the only smart things that's ever come out of Herm's mouth.
Very, very astute. I love it. No, but really appreciate you guys hopping on. Either way things go, I think we want to try and have you guys on for either maybe a ASU postseason or college football preview, or we could even just call it a heat check live or a round table, have you guys all on here again. I know Steven's itching to talk some Suns basketball as well. Probably in our post show here, I'm going to pick his brain a little bit on that, but definitely appreciate you guys coming on. This was our ASU check-in. We're going to be bringing you much more content. As I mentioned, Nico and I are recording Valley of the Suplex. Should be out this Friday, November 22nd. That's our pro wrestling podcast. We talk all things pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, AEW, you name it, we got it. Like I mentioned, also bringing you weekly recaps of the Arizona Cardinals, recaps of the Suns every 2 weeks. We'll start back up with the Diamondbacks in the new year when they kick off their season, and so much more. So make sure you're subscribing right here on YouTube so you can stay plugged in. Also follow us at AZ_VSP on Instagram, X, TikTok, Threads, anywhere. Just go Google Valley Sports Plug and you'll find us. But my name is Chris Patrick for Nico, Ben Miller, and Steven Miller. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Peace.